Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Lots to share. No guest. Instead, I want to do a commentary by Ralph Nader from Counterpunch, The Age of Corporate Treason. Then Norman Pollack from Counterpunch, Political Structural Sadomasochism to Ensure Global Power. Well, those should both wake people up. And then we're going to read a letter from a doctor who awakened to how bad medicine is in two different areas. Then we're going to be taking calls in our talkback segment today. We encourage you to call in and share your points of view. We always open with empowering information on healing and topics that can prevent disease. From Medical News Today, a new article on Splenda. Splenda is sucralose. And according to them, it's being downgraded from safe to caution after an Italian animal study links sucralose to a higher risk of developing leukemia. The Center for Science and the Public Interest says it waits the Italian study's review before deciding what long-term safety guide to assign to Splenda in its chemical cuisine guide to food additives. And hundreds of millions of people globally use artificial sweeteners. I'm opposed to them. You can use natural sweeteners. You can use stevia, xylitol. You can use coconut sugar. So you don't have to use Splenda. And the idea of putting people at risk for leukemia doesn't make any sense to me. Remember, we've had saccharin and aspartame, and we've had Splenda. So I would say get off the soft drinks, and that'll make a big difference too, because that's where you're getting a lot of these artificial sweeteners. Most Americans assume that the food they consume is safe. And I could understand why, because we have a lot of money that we spend each year, billions and billions of dollars, in multiple federal agencies, giving us some guarantee that our food is as safe as it can be. The trouble is, it's not true. According to one of the newest studies, this is according to the Food and Drug Administration, quote, 80% of U.S. packaged foods may contain dangerous chemicals. That's not from the FDA. That's just one of the citations. Quote, roughly 80% of all packaged foods sold within the United States contains chemicals outlawed in other parts of the world. Now, six common food additives found in an estimated 8 out of 10 products sold in American stores are banned outside the United States. What that means is it's putting hundreds of millions of Americans at risk of consuming chemicals considered too dangerous for human consumption in other countries. Now, grocery shop items, including best-selling soft drinks and cereals sold in the United States, contain additives such as brominated vegetable oil, olestra, and others that have been banned in Europe by the European Union. And there's a book by Jason Clayton, or Calton, and it's called Rich Food, Poor Food. And it's showing all these different foods that are just loaded with these chemicals. Well, here's the question for you. Why is it that if you're not allowed to have some of these elsewhere, you're allowed to have them here? Well, it's simple. Because in other countries, they don't have as much pressure being placed upon their authorities by the manufacturers. Here we do. That's that private and federal agency cooperation, the private industries and the federal agencies. For the women in this audience, I would suggest three supplements of all that you could take that could make an enormous difference in helping your overall health. And those would be relatively simple. Coenzyme Q10. A full-spectrum, high-quality multiple vitamin, and the omega-3 fatty acids. And those are able to help a lot of women, especially women in, who are premenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. Now, we do know that if women in South America who are using maca are helping themselves tremendously because it increases fertility, but it also helps improve menopausal symptoms. It helps eliminate hot flashes, night sweats, and mood swings. It also enhances a woman's libido at any age. And a lot of women simply don't have the libido when they get a little older that they did when they were younger. And men who lose libido, they generally take some form of a Viagra-like product. Of course, there are very serious side effects with that, including death. But you don't see a lot promoted for women. Of course, the most powerful aphrodisiac is your imagination. Those who are most imaginative, most creative, have the most vital sex life. Those who lack that imagination and whose life is otherwise boring frequently don't use their imagination in a way that could excite them and their partner and be fulfilling to both. 95% of any form of sustainable sexual joy is mental. The body's the vehicle, but the mind is the engine. So that'll help some of the women who are lacking that physical capacity. Now then, beyond those, I would also suggest saffron. Saffron's not easy to get. And you look at it, it's a tiny little thread. In fact, it looks like the kind of thread that you would pull off your clothes and throw away. But it's powerful. It can help a woman's brain chemistry. It inhibits the reuptake of dopamine and serotonin, two neurotransmitters which play a key role in mood and appetite. It can help minimize snacking. And when in one study, women taking 175 milligrams of saffron extract a day for 8 weeks decreased twofold their in-between meal snacks. They said they felt less need. They lost weight. And then finally, very important for all women, cruciferous vegetables. Most women will not develop breast cancer in their lifetime, but all women should take measures to prevent it. And one of the best ways is to increase your intake of cruciferous vegetables, broccoli and kale, cauliflower and cabbage and mustard. These are the anti-tumor property containing vegetables. For example, I3C, indole 3 carbinol, has a good effect on estrogen metabolism. It increases the production of weaker forms, estriol, of estrogen, which are protective, and it decreases the production of the stronger forms, the 4-hydroxyestrone, which are implicated in breast cancer. So there we have some nutrients and foods that are not expensive, except for saffron, that women should be taking, especially women over the age of 40, on a regular basis. Now, one other thing that can help is vitamin D. In fact, a new study shows that calcium and vitamin D together help women remineralize their bones during menopausal and postmenopausal times. So that's worth using, and that's based upon a study of 30,000 postmenopausal women and who took either calcium and vitamin D or placebo, and they found that those who took the calcium and vitamin D together had a substantial improvement in mineralization. That was published in the peer-reviewed journal Menopause. I believe that everything in life should be looked at honestly, no matter how ugly, no matter how vile or corrupt. But then once we see what we're actually looking at, then we can make a judgment of how do we want to respond. We make the mistake, of course, of responding in kind, and then when we end up frequently no better off than what we were angry or condemnful of. Instead, I believe that we should go to neutral and ask ourselves, what is the likely outcome if I respond in kind? If someone were unkind to me, I'm unkind to them. They smite me, I smite them. They gossip about me, I gossip about them. They betray me, I betray them. I see absolutely no benefit to that. All I see is it compounding negatives. Hence, the idea of learning a positive lesson even from the most negative and hurtful of conditions. And one of the things I always ask myself, no matter what it is in life, that happens that I have to deal with crisis after crisis, I say, now, what is the lesson in this that I can learn to help prevent in the future or to become stronger because of it? Even during the process itself, I may have had to go through a lot of bad moments. And hence, putting a positive mind in front of every negative problem doesn't change the consequences or circumstances I'm faced with. It changes how I'm going to be responding to it. How do I want to feel about it? And that's why I just don't believe in keeping a negative mindset. And that's what I share with people, and I've done so in about 120 different documentaries just on self-empowerment, overcoming the dark side, love, sexual healing, you're smarter than you think, and a whole series of these. Here's just the latest on affirming there's a lot to this, and I know many of you have the same attitude. This is from Christina Sarich from Natural Society. In a paradigm-shifting book written by Dr. Larry Dawsey, Reinventing Medicine, Beyond Mind, Body to a New Era of Healing, he gives scientifically supported evidence to suggest that compassion, empathy, generosity, and sharing have an overwhelming effect on our health. He maps some relatively strange methods of healing that are steeped in our cultural traditions from thousands of years ago, including all things psycho-spiritual, prayer, telepathy, intuition, precognition, prophetic dreams to detect physical illnesses before they appear in the body, and more thinking has already been proven to help treat the sick and ailing. This might be a good time to start placing an understanding of the efficacy of an out-there kind of modality. Now, here's where it goes, and here's our takeaway lesson from this. And by the way, I've had Larry Dawsey on the program several times. Thoughts are powerful. Positive thoughts are powerful, but negative thoughts are also powerful. Think of the destruction that happens with a negative thought. In that negative thought, you could be basing upon greed. Think of all the Wall Street accounts that showed after the crash that the brokers in all the major Wall Street houses had only one incentive each day, how to make money, even when that meant lying to their preferred clients, because every time they bought or sold stock, they made a commission. Whether the stock went up or down, they still profited. It's also called churning, where you get someone to invest in a lot of different ways, spinning stocks, because you're making the profit. And yet I'm quite sure that if you ask those people, do you feel you're just a greedy person with no morals? I'm sure most of them would say, not at all. You know, I'm a moral person. I have beliefs, maybe even religious. Indeed, that's what they believe. But the consequence of the thought is throwing out an energy. And it's the energy that we share. That's why you can always feel someone who's positive and someone who's negative. Someone who's in synchronicity with you and someone who is in an opposite movement where there is no compatibility. Patients given a placebo pill often respond well in over 30% of the cases, no matter what the disease, cancer, heart disease, depression. The pill is not what heals them. It is the belief that it will heal them. So when we focus our minds on a good outcome, a positive solution to a physical crisis like cancer, AIDS, it gets better, pure and simple. Still others will argue that you can only heal the body by healing the consciousness. This is what Dossie says, quote, "Eventually it becomes clear that our emotions, attitudes, and thoughts profoundly affect our bodies, sometimes to the degree of life and death. Soon, mind-body effects were recognized to have positive as well as negative impacts on the body. This realization came largely from research on the placebo effect, the beneficial results of suggestion, expectation, and positive thinking." Well, I would agree with that. In fact, there's a whole school of psychology, and Dr. Henry Grayson, and among others, have led that. It's positive psychology. It's to catalyze a change in psychology from a preoccupation only with repairing the worst things in life is also building the best qualities of life. And I believe in order to heal anyone, you have to help that person get to a place where they see an ideal. Even when I'm sitting across someone whose body's been ravaged with cancer, and that's the only time they come to see me, is at death's door. When they've been already told by everyone, hospice care, there's nothing more anybody can do. And they are right. But during that whole process, months or years, they were never invited in to the healing process. So you start by inviting people in. From this moment forward, what would you ideally like to do if there were no no's, only yes's? And suddenly the people look at you and you can see their eyes are starting to light up, and they'll, "What do you mean?" Well, what I mean is, let's say you weren't 50. You could be any age you wanted, and you could feel any way you want, and you could do anything you want. What would it be? And it takes some time, because these are doors they've never opened. These are realities they've never experienced. They've lived very controlled and highly disciplined, regulatory, ritualized lives. The trouble is, it didn't honor their authentic self, which is sometimes the bad part of the story, where people work so hard and were so diligent to do so many things right, but they never lived the right life for themselves. So once you get people thinking that they can do something and they're not limited by their age or by their disease, instead, their imagination has to guide them. You just start seeing everything change. I see in the biochemistry, I'll see in their blood work up, their immune modulator starting to change. That's the power of helping to reinforce in people the good that they can do. Positive thinking, positive expectations, positive suggestions. And I've seen it tens of thousands of times in my career. We know that we're all capable of being happy. We know we can all feel love and gratitude. When you do that, watch your immune systems just bounce up. There are other physiological changes that happen when we think good thoughts, and these could very well contribute to a spontaneous healing, even if it's just the common cold. So the takeaway message today is, before you react, reason. Stop for a moment, go to neutral, and ask yourself, what is the likely outcome of what I'm about to say or do? Will it lead to something positive or something negative? Will I compound the problem I'm in? The way you think then becomes the cornerstone to reaching happiness and your health goals. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing, and more to come. I've been writing as I stop and finish my day, and I'm wired because of all that has been filmed that day. It's what I call the ooh-ah moment, when I'm behind a camera and I'm hearing someone say something that I haven't heard anyone else say before. And it just lights up the energy in the room. And I'm getting a lot of that for this new film, which will be out shortly. This is going to be one of those really strong films. Not that the rest have not been, but this is so unique and so different. And this is going to open up a lot of minds and eyes. And it'll be done in 2 weeks. And then I'll premiere it in Los Angeles, in Washington, and in New York. And we should have more ooh-ah moments in our own life. And we can have remarkable moments if we're willing to recognize how remarkable we are, no matter our lack of fame or significant social position or degree or income. We are still remarkable as long as we can think our own unique thoughts. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall, and we're going to go to our talkback segment in a few moments. I just have a couple commentaries, one from Norman Pollock and one from Ralph Nader. I've written and shared with you over 200 original commentaries in the last 12 months for myself. I've just finished writing four more, and I'll be doing those on upcoming programs. And by the way, we're trying to get it to where anywhere in the world you can listen over a telephone. We're working on it, and it's getting close. For now, however, those who live in the United States and Canada can listen over the telephone, and I want to tell you, there are millions and millions and millions of minutes being listened by tens of thousands of people who call 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. 550-0869. In fact, I was just looking at the numbers in the latest ratings. We have more people listening over the telephone than some non-commercial radio stations have their entire 24/7 listenership. And that's just for a program. So it's growing. Others are listening over mobile devices by going to prn.fm, TuneIn apps, Stitcher apps, or the other one, which I'm not sure what it is. Anyhow, lots of ways people download the show and listen. Now, two commentaries, and then we'll go to your talkback segment. This is from Norman Pollock, and it's entitled Political Structural Sadomasochism to Ensure Global Power. America's going through the worst of days under the fiction, false consciousness, of these being the best of days. We learn only recently all part of the Snowden revelations about government surveillance at the National Security Agency, the world's largest spying operation, domestic and foreign, has an extremely close and still growing working relationship with Silicon Valley. And that's not cool, and that's not good. Because the right of privacy, a main constituent of the individual's autonomy, not constrained or shaped by thought control, why this encroachment on our very identities as persons, not the beliefs and roles we are steadily indoctrinated to assume, but the inner core of self-development or unfolding possibilities, is being infringed upon. The U.S. is now notorious in international circles for regime change. Bad enough, but it gets worse. The U.S. internally, perhaps as the necessary or ratifying condition which makes broad-gauged intervention, including regime change, possible, has taken the quantitative jump into the cultural molding process of the social management of personality. We are reaching the point of no return as a nation, assigning the privatization much of the business of data mining, wherein our private lives are stripped as nearly bare as possible, the information routed to government for purposes of surveillance and to private business, often the same information, so as to stimulate wants and sell goods and services. Crash, yes. The convergence of militarism and consumerism, mutual reinforcement of the two formulas for sustaining global power and capitalistic growth alike brings us to the present day, in which surveillance plus privatization equals the militarization of capitalism. The former keeping us in line, social discipline through tactics of fear in order to engender self-pacification, and the latter giving us a depth of commitment to poverty as a moral law unto itself, legitimizing capital accumulation by any and all means, intervention, regime change, foreign conquest. Is this gross exaggeration? Not if one takes Snowden's revelation seriously and weighs the activities of the National Security Agency, and that's a big one, as the direct channel into the lives and minds of Americans, and we see foreign nationals providing the conditions for totalitarianism where free choice is non-existent. Instead, all choice is dictated from above. Then, U.S. expansionism, a euphemism for the combined thrust of imperialism and militarism, will have free reign throughout the world, aided and abetted through the promotion of political culture of complicity in all things pertaining to war, consumption, and the inculcation of patriotic values. The last name decisive to the reshaping of America itself, so that class structure will reflect wide differentials of wealth and power. The poor as prime candidates for self-pacification in the name of the greater good. We therefore punish ourselves, a collective self-sacrifice, on behalf of the glorification of power and force, as though foreign conquest can be fed back into our empty hulks, our consciousness, at the expense, gladly surrendered, of a vital social safety net, a more egalitarian social structure, and freedom to think, to criticize, to create alternative societal systems and political economies. Hence, the masochistic element promoting capitalism and militarism to the detriment of domestic well-being. Think Sean Hannity. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Capitalism and militarism. What a marriage. But what of sadomasochism? Delight in the infliction of pain on others? A delight in cruelty? As these days, the horrid impersonality of incinerating others from 8,000 miles away, be they collateral damage, such as women and children in the vicinity of the drone strike, signature strikes, the deliberate targeting of funerals for the victims and of the first responders coming to their assistance, or suspicious individuals of identity unknown. Here our own masochism, meaning sacrificing social needs on the altars of war, intervention, nuclear modernization, humongous defense spending, justifies to ourselves our aggression to others, obviously ungrateful to the bearers of liberty and democratic gifts. As one contemplates the scene which I intimately associate with Obama, given his vacuous promotion of secrecy, surveillance, and criminalizing of divulging information exposing despotic government and illegal activities, possibly more than his predecessors, one comes to see the psychopathological nature of American capitalism as requiring surveillance at this stage of possible senescence in order to sustain itself. The foregoing thoughts were prompted by the New York Times editorial on June 20th, which rightly criticized the conscious place of private contractors in intelligence gathering, and a further article on the close ties of the National Security Agency in Silicon Valley. Privatization has become the curse of American democracy, even specifically in intelligence. It radiates out to include the fusion of capitalism and national security, rendering government the midwife to the policy goals of business implemented via the use of force. Say what one will about Snowden, his revelations have brought to light what had been a secret world of private contractors. We paid attention to Booz Allen previously? No. Who imagined a 500,000 civilians with security clearances? The U.S. government has created a moral monstrosity in which the impetus to war and its planning provide the favorable environment for these private sector firms to garner immense profits, giving them ample reason to perpetuate overclassification and render findings suitable to intervention. In conclusion, like it or not, Obama must be held accountable for his militarization of capitalism itself. Deficit reduction? Not until the entire military sector is drastically reduced. Civil liberties? Not until the government stops prosecuting the whistleblowers under the Espionage Act. The future of democracy? Regrettably bleak when surveillance is central to the execution of public policy. And that was from Norman Pollack. And I'll share one more with you, and then we'll go to your calls. In fact, I'm just looking here, we have a lot of people want to get in. I may save Ralph Nader's for another day. Let's go to our talkback segment, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And while we're doing that, I want to share something from Juan Cole from Truthdig. Top 10 American steps toward a police state. Now, I've told you for over 5 years, we are a police state, that every single dissident, every single activist, every protester in America is now considered a person of suspicion. And depending upon if you're in the environmental movement, then it's going beyond that, animal rights, then you're actually on a terrorist list. Juan shares 10 things you should look for. The police state, a term first coined in the mid-19th century in Germany, is characterized by a standing political police, by intense domestic surveillance, and by restrictions on the movements of citizens. Now, police states are on a spectrum, and unfortunately, in the past decade, the United States has moved towards police stateness in small but key ways. Here are the signs. One, the United States National Security Agency recently requested all Verizon phone records in the United States for a period of 3 months, meaning your telephone records, who you called and how long, say a great deal about you. This is a form of mass surveillance. Two, the United States has assigned 250 national security agents to sift through a massive further British database of U.S. telecommunications and emails derived from attaching packet analyzers to transatlantic fiber optic cables. Three, the federal government claims the right to examine the contents of laptops of U.S. citizens whenever they enter the United States, in contravention of the Fourth Amendment. 60 million Americans travel abroad annually. Four, the U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the world. Those in prison have grown from 220 per 100,000 to 700 per 100,000 in just the last 30 years. The U.S. holds over 2 million inmates and 6 million people at any given time under supervision, more than were in Stalin's gulag. State spending on prisons has risen at 600% the rate of spending on higher education. Five, 6 million persons convicted of felonies have been disenfranchised and cannot vote. Most are not in prison because of the war on drugs. Many of these people are not actually guilty of serious crimes. The practice hits the poor minorities. Some 7% of African Americans are ineligible to vote, but less than 2% of whites. Six, police can take DNA samples of all arrestees on serious crimes, whether they are proven guilty or not. Even Justice Scalia believes the ruling opens the door for DNA sample collection for all arrest. 13 million Americans are arrested every year, 1.6 million on drug charges, and half of those on marijuana charges. Number seven, American police are becoming militarized, with SWAT teams proliferating and the use of drones, GPS tracking devices, and military equipment, as well as participation of National Guards in the war on drugs. Number eight, legislators are increasingly attempting to criminalize public protest, as with the current bill that would make it a crime knowingly to trespass in security zones where persons are found who are under secret surveillance protection. Authorities have sometimes also attempted to restrict public protesters to protest zones, thus keeping them out of view of the news cameras. Number nine, the U.S. Patriot Act institutes gag orders that are a violation of the First Amendment, forbidding persons and companies from revealing that the government has secretly asked for surveillance records. And number 10, the same act allows government agencies, including the Pentagon, to issue national security letters without any warrant, making broad and unspecified demands for records on large numbers of people. So, that is what most people never think about. Most people never consider how close we are, or even that we are now a police state. And who benefits? Those people who have spent the money to lobby and get in the best places with their ideas. I'm Gary Knoll, a break and then back with your calls. Please stay with us.
When you just give love and never get low, you'd better let love depart. I know it's so, and yet I know I can't get you out of my heart. You made me leave my happy home. You took my love and now you've gone.
Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey. Your turn. You're on the line.
Hi, Gary. Well, I have a subject pertaining to exactly what you do, and I would like your information on it. I believe the NSA is responsible for stressing the public, and stress leads to illness. And there was a TV show back in 1952 started. It was called I've Got a Secret with Gary Moore. And it turns out that everyone has a secret. They're not necessarily bad, maybe a birth defect or something, but everybody has some little secret. And it's part of our adolescent nature to keep a secret, too. So the thing is that since everybody has a secret, by the NSA telling us that they're listening to our phone calls, reading our emails, in a sense, it leads us all into self-censorship. And self-censorship is very repressive. It leads up. I believe it leads to illness and other problems. And we have the CIA, we have the FBI, we have Homeland Security. I mean, what are we paying these trillions of dollars for? Do we need to be listened to in our phone calls? And I think that what they're doing is phishing. They're phishing for data. And this may be for commercial uses because besides listening to our phone calls and reading our emails, we're already tracked. We're tracked with the Visa, with the MasterCard there. They know everything we're buying, all our commercial interaction. And now they'll know everything. So it's a total package, like zero privacy, total secrecy. And I say it's totally unhealthy and will cost the American people millions of dollars, perhaps billions of dollars, in stress-related illnesses. And I'd like your feeling on that.
Benjamin Franklin once said, praise to the undeserving is severe satire. And I see no governmental agency that I praise or respect or trust or believe. I believe that what we need is a small, quality agencies of government to help us with that which we have in common, to support that which we need in common, to see that the least amongst us are protected and helped, and that we all are paying for the support of our society. You need a flat income tax for that, so nobody has the riches and the lawyers and the CPAs to bypass it, which is the fact now. You and I have to pay our taxes. General Electric made $5 billion net profit, and they got a refund that we paid for. As long as we continue to think through left and right, liberal and conservative ideological eyes will never see the truth of anything, including the fact, as you said, that we are sponsored. We're sponsored by a government that insists that it knows what we should eat, what vaccines we should take, what we should learn in school, controlling our curriculum, what standards we must pass in order to be a doctor, though it has nothing to do with healing, what standards of environmental protection we have, even though it does not anything whatsoever to protect our environment from getting hotter and to get more polluted. So everything they tell us to do is wrong, and their agencies are just, they are massively corrupt. So if you took all that out, then your question that you ask, and rightly so, it would be negated. It's like trying to have Obamacare, which is just a complete absurd set of laws that were written by the insurance industry to give them an extra $500 billion in profit to $1 trillion profit a year, and the drug companies and the hospital associations. But it doesn't prevent one single disease. It doesn't teach us how to live a longer life. It doesn't show us the nature and pathologizing of disease, the things we should know, so that at the earliest levels we can start to appreciate that if I eat and drink this, I'm likely to have this disease. They only care about who's covered and who's going to pay for it, and what penalties are going to happen to you as an individual or you as a company if you don't. And yet, trying to get smart people to understand the problem is that they take for granted that the existing systems and the existing leaders of these systems are bright and the best that we can get, and they're the worst. They're dumber than bricks. They're just opportunists. So we need a complete new makeover of everything. I don't believe in reforming anything. The very nature of reform means that you'll never see honest change, and that's true in anything we've ever done. So we are at that level, and that's why I don't support that. Okay, Harvey?
Thank you, Gary.
All right, so just remember, it's the American public that allows their freedoms, their First Amendment, their Fourth Amendment, to be taken away. We allowed it, which means we've enabled these sociopaths, and they're all sociopaths. Anyone who needs power over another person, including in a relationship, is a sociopath, and they're corrupt to the core. I am going to share this with Ralph Nader because it ties in with this, and then we'll go back to your calls at 888-874-4888. Remember, those who have sold out for a price that benefits them but costs us. Genetic engineering, they sold us out. Non-sustainable agriculture, they sold us out. Not paying attention to global climate change until it was too late and still haven't done anything, they sold us out. Supporting nuclear and gas hydrofracking, they sold us out. Supporting a drug for every condition and making up conditions that don't exist to sell a drug, they sold us out. Allowing the wealthiest corporations to keep $31 trillion in offshore banks so they don't have to pay taxes on it, they sold us out. Knowing that those who had once worked diligently and honestly and nobly in the United States to make quality products and services, they sold us out by offshoring and closing down 58,000 factories just in the last 12 years. And over 6 million people lost their jobs. Their treaties, NAFTA, GATT, the new Trans-Pacific, they sold us out. Changing the curriculum of schools and privatizing schools, the private and public partnerships, they sold us out. Printing money with nothing to back it up, they sold us out. Lying to us at every level, criminalizing drugs when we saw the effects of criminalizing alcohol, and it allowed the entire growth and manifestation of organized crime. They profit from it. They profit by keeping drugs illegal and hundreds of billions of dollars a year spent on the war on drugs, not the least of which is destroying people's lives for possession of drugs. They sold us out. So where exactly are you going to reform anything? You can't. So you simply have to be as conscious as you are in the choices you make and get off the grid so they can't impact you as they have historically. When you listen to this kind of broadcasting by all the different people we have, you're getting off their grid. When you read the articles on progressive issues instead of the crap in the New York Times, you're empowering yourself. When you stop watching their reality shows, you again are taking the lead in your own life. Here's what Ralph Nader says, and this is why I'm going to share it with you. It's entitled The Age of Corporate Treason. We are big global U.S. corporations, so unpatriotic? Yes. Why? After all, they were created in the USA, rose to immense profit because of the toil of American workers. are bailed out by American taxpayers whenever they're in trouble and are safeguarded abroad by the U.S. military. Yet these corporate Goliaths work their tax lawyers overtime to escape U.S. taxes. Many pay less than you do in federal income taxes. Imagine corporations like General Electric have paid not federal income tax on U.S. profits for years. Mega corporations have abandoned U.S. workers by entrenching pull-down trade agreements that make it easier than ever to ship jobs and whole industries to fascist and communist regimes abroad, which keep their workers near serfdom. Remember, the U.S. has run large trade deficits for the past 30 years as a result of anti-American trade deals pushed by these global companies. These Goliaths are pressing for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade agreement that will further pull down our economy. Corporate CEOs are raiding and draining traditional pension plans for millions of workers who are left without their expected and earned pension payments on retirement. They are freezing the federal minimum wage for low-income service jobs that they cannot export at $7.25 an hour, leaving 30 million workers in the United States making less than workers made in 1968, inflated adjusted. Having wages that go backwards into the future means workers cannot afford the basic necessities of life for themselves and their children. Giant companies hire legions of lobbyists to weaken or abolish consumer, worker, and environmental safety and health laws, to stop our country from joining all other Western nations with full Medicare for all. Corporate campaign cash increasingly flows to indentured politicians who in turn do the bidding of the corporate paymasters at their expense. We've yet to find a CEO of a United States global corporation who will even go through the motions at their annual shareholders meeting, standing up in the name of the company pledging allegiance to the United States with liberty and justice for all. When asked, as was General Motors, the CEO refused. Charge companies with unpatriotic behavior and you'll tap a nerve or two. The munitions companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing put ads on television and radio asserting how their modern weapons back up our troops who are sent to expand the empire. Of course, defense contractors never mention their huge profits, cost overruns, and their staffing the higher echelons of the Pentagon with their own appointees. Nor do these arms merchants ever raise a patriotic objection to the criminal wars of aggression conducted by Bush Cheney against defenseless people of Iraq, whose tottering dictator, formerly U.S. ally, was not a threat to America. Other countries are trying softer promotions of their claim care for America. Have you seen the lengthy ad campaign for Chevron that starts with some bold demand by a pictured ordinary person? One such ad begins, "Oil companies should support the communities they're part of." Chevron's emphasis, and of course, invariably, Chevron answers, "We agree," and lists their charities here and abroad. Evaluating corporate philanthropic efforts is for another time. Suffice it to say that not one giant corporation exceeds 1% of their pre-tax profits when the law allows them to give up to 5% deductible. Do you think that all the above only comes from consumer worker advocates? Then read a new paperback book by Robert Monks titled Citizens Disunited, The Corporate Capture of the American Dream. Monks, a former corporate lawyer, corporate CEO, founder of companies, bank chairman, and investor advocate extraordinary, writes memorably about the corporate excesses. He quotes an Apple executive who told the New York Times, quote, "We sell iPhones in over 100 countries. We don't have an obligation to solve American problems. This is what greed looks like in the global epic of corporatism. Plunder the treasury, to be sure, but then deny all sense of responsibility to your country of domicile. Outsource all obligations and, like maggots, set to work destroying the host from inside by exporting his jobs and depleting his revenue sources." End quote. Well, that's what it is. I'm Gary Knoll, 888-874-4888. We'll take some calls. Luann Panessi's in studio in New York. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I want to ask your audience to just take a moment with me. Close their eyes and imagine. Imagine they're in this lush, peaceful environment with formal gardens and fountains. Imagine having mouth-watering cuisine all throughout the day, fresh organic juices and shakes. every day having individualized fitness instruction, learning over a dozen forms of yoga over a 7-day period, experiencing utter physical relaxation, and even having personalized wellness counseling. And to add to all that, seeing you live every evening. Now, open your eyes and know that this is going to happen in a couple of weeks. We were totally booked up. I want to let people know that I have just, I think, 2 work-study openings for the second week, 1 for the first week. These are the people that are going to help out. You still have access to all of the different things that we're doing, but you're helping out for half the price. And if there is, I have like 1 opening that I could squeeze in for the second week if people want to still come. If anyone is interested in experiencing something like this, I want you to contact me. I'm going to give you my home office number. This way you'll get me direct. That number is 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198.
Luann, there's a new article out today, and it says this. This is from Steven Rosenfeld from Alternet. 70% of Americans are emotionally disconnected at work. Shocking poll reveals workplace zombie land. Quote, if you thought that Americans who kept their jobs during the Great Recession were glad to be working, you would be dead wrong. According to a Gallup report, 70% of American workers are, quote, emotionally disconnected at work, with nearly 1 in 5 employees, quote, actively disengaged. It's zombie land out there for the American workforce. Gallup's ongoing State of the American Workforce reveals that America is largely a nation of working automatons, with most people not feeling emotional ties to what they do, and sizable numbers are actively seeking to sabotage their colleagues and managers. Quote, these latest findings indicate that 70% of the American are not engaged or actively disengaged and are emotionally disconnected from their workplace and less likely to be productive. Well, now, tie that into what you said. I believe that what we all need is just to stop for a moment and drop all the balls. Now, for some people, they can't do that because of indentured guilt. They got to be working nonstop for everyone else. The moment they take a second to exhale and look at their own needs, they're made to feel guilty. Because once someone starts doing for others, more often than not, the others don't do for themselves. We actually weaken people like this. I know. I counseled a person who has 2 grown children who went to college but don't have the perfect jobs. So they're staying at home, so the mother is working 80-hour work weeks because her husband isn't aligned with his ideal work anymore. So she's working to feed 4 people when all 4 of those people should be working and helping. She not only has to work all day, then she comes home, then she has to shop on her way home, then she has to come home and make a meal for everyone. She's Italian. What can I tell you? If she was Jewish, she'd be crying and complaining on the cell phone about
it. She'd be ordering out.
Yeah, but angry about it. So that, and I just said to the person, what are you trying to achieve? I mean, you want to be happy? Well, you're taking the wrong approach. Why can't you allow these grown people to be responsible for themselves? Why aren't they doing other jobs to bring in income? Why aren't they out shopping? Why aren't they planting a garden? Why aren't they doing the laundry? You're doing the laundry? Yeah, it's, you know, midnight. I throw it in the dryer and then I collapse. Yeah, and exactly what is the point of this exercise? So at some point, we just all have to drop all these balls, get out of our unrealistic expectations that things somehow are going to be the way they were, they're not, and look at what could be. And that's why this retreat is so important, because in the environment that you have described, where there's nothing but beauty and quiet and nature and wonderful growth. One of the reasons I chose to have it at this place is because the gardens were started over 90 years ago, 90 years ago. So they have some phenomenal gardens and places for meditation. But also, I've intentionally, as you know, I limited it to very few people so that the people who are there get a lot of personal attention. Everyone's going to get their own personal exercise, personal counseling on health, and meditation. The type of quality of healing energies and workshops, gardening workshops, sprouting workshops, raw food cooking workshops, regular vegan cooking workshops, the three different types of yoga by three different teachers, the artist healing workshops, so much, and juicing galore all day, water aerobics classes. Nothing ever done. I've done hundreds and hundreds. This is going to be the most comprehensive, wonderful experience possible.
And imagine just
And I'm
being...
doing it as a public... Remember, mind you, I'm not making a penny, nor are you. This is for a public service, our time, our energy, so that the non-commercial radio station, the person listening to, can have some proceeds to help them out. And you did your homework, and you found that the average cost per person for what we're doing is... What is it per week?
It was easily between $5,000 and $8,000. $5,000 was a real discount where you're sharing a room with like seven other people, a bunch of bunks. This,
okay.
Yeah.
And here you're getting all this for $2,000 as a regular person, but $1,000 for work study. So that's why it's going to be so much special. Well, this, Luann, this is the last time we're mentioning that. This is it. And it's cheap flight time, so people get their flights. Easy to do. It's out of season. Give a call. Give them the number, please.
631-504-6198.
Okay, great. Do it again.
631-504-6198.
Thank you, Luann. Now, as I promised, there is this medical doctor. I mentioned this yesterday, and her name is Kelly Brogan, B-R-O-G-A-N, and this is in Gaia Health. Good publication, by the way. They do good work. I respect them. Here's what she says. Quote, a doctor's awakening on flu vaccines and pregnancy. The flu vaccine is now being pushed on pregnant women, supposedly to protect their babies. As this doctor explains, nothing can be further from the truth. Skip the vaccine. Protect yourself and your baby with good health and a healthy immune system. You can't take it with a vaccine. As a conventionally trained, dyed-in-the-wood psychiatrist, I learned that mental illness is a manifestation of an imbalance of brain chemicals that can be largely reduced to too little serotonin and or norepinephrine and too little dopamine, or messed up excitatory signals at the membrane level. These deficits required pharmaceutical intervention for repair, just as one of my attendings once patronizingly said to an inpatient post-suicidal attempt, if you had poor vision, you would need glasses. There would just be no way you could navigate the world without those glasses, no matter how much you wanted to. I don't believe this anymore. I've left the church, and I've run into the woods where I'm listening to the sermons delivered by the natives there, those who believe in a natural order, in the body's capacity to heal, in the sanctity of clean environment, and in the interconnectedness of spirit, nourishment, and movement. But this was a journey for me. I started to open my eyes during my first pregnancy when I began my fellowship in treating pregnant and postpartum women. I learned how to consent them and what informed consent really looked like around treatment with psychotropics and pregnancy and lactation. Many of these women had been on medication for the better part of their adult lives and either found themselves pregnant or planned to be pregnant or developed symptoms despite treatment. I pored over the literature for hundreds of hours, memorizing authors and statistics, distilling complex analytical concepts, and building a rational path with some forks in the road. And for these women to travel, I helped them to understand that the known risks, the unknown risks, the alternatives, and allow them to assess the perceived benefits. This process would often culminate in a 120-minute session involving all and any interested family members and extensive communication with other providers, general psychiatrists, obstetricians, therapists, so that everybody was on the same page. You can imagine that it began to rub me the wrong way when these very same patients would come in and casually mention that they had often gotten a flu shot, often without a single medical provider involved, like at a pharmacy. No consent, no discussion. I didn't know much about the flu vaccine other than when I was entering medical school, pregnant women and babies were in the contraindicated demographic. I also knew that doctors, residents, and medical students almost never got the flu shot voluntarily. I began to look in the literature through my lens of best quality pregnancy data, the prospective cohort studies, well-controlled, looked at the outcome, and I didn't see anything good. And then I saw what was considered the best. Quote, animal reproduction studies have not been conducted with influenza virus vaccine. It is also not known whether influenza virus vaccine can cause fetal harm when administered to a pregnant woman. Although animal reproductive studies have not been conducted, the prescribing healthcare provider should be aware of the recommendations of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices that state that if used during pregnancy, administration of influenza vaccine after 14 weeks of gestation may be preferable to avoid coincidental association of the vaccine with early pregnancy loss, end quote. Who's blowing air into this trumpet, I was thinking. To this day, I remain appalled at the doublespeak on part of the CDC around this intervention that has been conclusively found to be ineffective and dangerous to the general population and is grossly understudied in the pregnancy population. Here's some tidbits about vaccinating for influenza. Dr. Lawrence Povesky, an enlightened pediatrician, discusses in his writings in Patient Education, we are awash in viruses and bacteria. Exposure does not equal infection. Presumption that four strains are worthy of specific action is not based upon evidence, nor common sense. Incidence of the flu at the population level is grossly inflated as a fear-mongering tactic. When patients present with flu-like symptoms, they are rarely diagnosed, confirming as being an influenza type A or B, and the vast majority of the time may be neither. A brilliant 7-year-old assessment states, quote, in general, most symptoms of flu are not caused by influenza virus, but by a variety of non-influenza viruses, bacteria, and other infectious organisms, or other non-infectious conditions. And so it is. And it goes on to talk about all of her research, and both in psychiatry, where she found that the selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting drugs didn't work and were dangerous, and that the vaccine, the flu vaccine for pregnancy, should never be done. But she had to do her homework. And then she, as she said, she left the church. She became an independent thinker. Good for her. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we'll talk about the NSA leaker, Ed Snowden, and his asylum request coming at a very high price to the country Ecuador. And we'll be talking about the Supreme Court mixed bag of edicts in the second half of the program.
We look forward to it. Utrice Lead right now on Progressive Radio Network.
To play around with hearts, hastening at my call.